Good afternoon and welcome to On The Radar right here on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. I'm your host Ndafa Happy Juju and I'm here to keep you company up until 14:30. It's Thursday and that means we are inching closer to the weekend, but the national pulse is only rising. The stories are sharpening, the conversations are getting louder, and the spotlight is on how we build not just promises, but platforms. From Ongwediva to Rudrets, from Gobabas to the farmlands of Kavango, On The Radar brings you Namibia's real-time check-in. Today we ask, are we investing in futures or just headlines? The National Youth Development Fund has landed with a promise of 257 million Namibian dollars to tackle youth unemployment and rural poverty. But what does this mean in practice? Will young people in Otapi or Ochinene finally get the support they've long waited for? Can agriculture become cool again and profitable for the next generation? We unpack the power structures behind these policies, speak to the people at the heart of implementation, and amplify the voices of young Namibians who are demanding more than just visibility. They want viability. Now, whether you're tuning in from your baki, a classroom, the studio, or the shade of a palm tree, you are part of this nation-shaping dialogue. Stream us live on Eagle FM app or website and connect with us on WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This is On The Radar, where Namibia's power, policy, and people come face to face. Let's get right into it. Now, the government of Namibia has announced the launch of a 257 million Namibian dollar Nation Youth Development Fund aimed at supporting young people via loans at favorable interest rates of 2% to 4%. Now, the fund had been approved by cabinet about a month earlier and was confirmed by President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah at the Enana Expo to become operational in August 2025. The fund is designed to directly tackle Namibia's youth unemployment rate, which stood at approximately 44.4% to 44.5% in mid 2025. It aims to stimulate the growth of youth-owned enterprises, startups, cooperatives, and innovative projects across key sectors of the economy. Priority areas include agriculture and agro-processing, green and eco-friendly initiatives, as well as manufacturing and value addition, all chosen for potential to drive sustainable development and create long-term employment opportunities for young Namibians. Now, to discuss further, we are joined by Oshana Governor, that is Hofni Ipinge. Good afternoon, Sey, and a pleasure to have you on The Radar Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Yes.
Governor, tell us more about this 257 million Namibian dollar youth fund, or not just fund, but youth development fund. What exactly does it entail?
Yes, thank you very much for reaching out to me. And I guess you also reached out to my fellow governors from different regions, even though the fund is one. So this is an initiative of the government through the SWAPO manifesto on youth empowerment. You know, we got different criteria or key areas that the government want to focus in, and one of it is youth empowerment.
Yeah.
So now, with now looking at the higher unemployment rate that we have among the youth of our country, so the government, through the ruling party, come up with a concept of introducing the youth development fund that will assist young people who are interested to come up with their business. And they are finding it so difficult to get that startup capitals. So the government now roll out the youth or the what we call youth development fund, or at the tune of 250 million for those one who are having cooperative businesses, because it's not going to be given to individuals. They have to form up cooperatives. They will have to work as a group. So we look at the sustainability and also accountability, and make sure that the fund, it's really going to be used as it was intended for. So now this fund, it's rolled out. The forms are out. They were directed straight to the governor's office because we received the communication through from the office of the Ministry of Finance. So we rehearsed with the regional councillors to make sure that regional councillors made enough copies and spoke to our young people who are living in their constituency and encouraged them to come and collect those forms and make sure that they fill up those forms correctly,
yeah,
and also attach to the required documents for that will you know, qualify them to be given that fund.
Mm. And while we are at that, the fund was announced early August, of course, and it's operational, say, to be unveiled in this August. But I see that due date for applications are 11th August. Isn't that too short notice for the youth to comply all the necessary documents that you're talking about now?
Yeah, by looking at now that the information have been there, it's known, but it was officially loaned out, or the communication was officially sent to our office last Monday. So then, yes, Monday. So then, because we find out that it's the timing is too short, because the due date is supposed to be on the 11th,
yeah,
and the time is too short. You know, looking at the requirements that the beneficiary need to have, looking at now, especially we talk of the requirements like we talk of the requirement like, you know, Namibian ID certified copy.
Mm-hmm.
We talk of business and cooperative registration certificate,
mm-hmm,
certified copy as well. We talk of business plan and financial projections,
yeah,
which is a little bit difficult to most of our people. It will be easy for those one who are already started, but those one who are doing it today and tomorrow, I know it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
And proof of business address, where applicable, and bank account confirmation letter. You know, some of our young people, they are living in the far rural area. They have to come to the bank, open up an account if they don't have,
mm-hmm,
so that they can have a bank account confirmation letter, which is meant for business, but not for individuals.
Yeah.
It should be on the business name. So, and their business has also to be registered. So those are the requirements, and they need also to, you know, register as a group. Means that they have to go and talk to others so that they can form a group that we call a cooperative for them to qualify to get this funding. So we finally address the issue of the short time, and we are happy that the Ministry of Finance at least accepted our request,
mm-hmm,
to extend the date, which is now extended to the 25th of August.
Mm.
At least it's almost 2 weeks to go for our business or young business people to exercise or to take this exercise seriously. And those who are qualified, this youth fund is only accommodating young people within the age of 35. Within the age of 35,
mm-hmm,
if you are over 35, you are not the one who is
being targeted.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you are not the target,
mm-hmm,
but this one is specifically for the youth under the age of 35. So then, at least we tried to put up our request to the Ministry of Finance so that we can give ample time to our young people to come together, form a cooperative, register their businesses, and also have all the required documents that the ministry it's asking from them. Then from there, they will also need to understand how to fill up the form and we need to go to them and to the, through the office of the chancellor, at least teach them on how to fill up the form and have time also to make some inquiry. In case they don't understand how to fill up the forms, they can be able to consult our office. We are there to assist them so that they can, give relevant information that are required for them to qualify to get this loan.
Mm-hmm. Governor, I just appreciate how you're going into it detail by detail. I'm just imagining if I come to your office actually asking for help, the way I will be treated. But all in all now, what does this message send to you personally being a governor at this time, at this moment in time with things like this actually unveiling? What does it send to you?
Yeah, no, we are happy to, as young governors that were at least, trusted with such huge responsibility by the head of state, our president, His Excellency Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah. If you can see, most of the governors are young people, and we know how difficult it is because we are also part of our fellow youth. Mm. And we, even though we are not certified funder, we know the struggle. We are coming from there. And if people, especially me in Oshakati, our Oshana region, and my office is in Oshakati. I'm really willing to assist because sometimes the office of the councillors are very far. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to go, especially in Ongwediva, you have to go to Ongwediva, you have to go to Ubudia, you have to go to Oshakati West, you have to go to Okatana, you have to go to Kuyushona. You have to go to the two Ondangwa, rural and urban. Maybe if you are staying within the vicinity, please feel free to come to our office. If you need the form, we'll give it to you. We have those forms.
Mm.
We'll give you the forms. You don't need to travel long distance. Those one who are within the jurisdiction of the constituent offices, they can go there. And those one who will find that, the office of the governor is nearby me, please feel free. We are ready for you. We can give you the form. We are also ready to assist you in answering those questions and help you to fill up the correct information in those forms as per the request of the ministry. And we are also ready to guide you of what to do so that you can do the correct things in order for you not to be disqualified at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So we are ready to assist you. Feel free to come to our office. Go to the office of the councillors also. We are there as one team so that we can be able to assist our people, especially in filling up the forms and also providing that service of making copies and issue it to our youth, people that want to participate in that youth fund.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what message would you give out to the youth who might be very lucky to be the one that are granted this fund? Because I'm sure it's not going to benefit exactly each and every Namibian or Namibian youth. And of course, it's targeting those below 35. But what message would you give unto them? Or what advice would you give unto them, Governor?
Yes, at least if you happen to be one of the lucky person to be offered this opportunity, make sure that you use it maximally, and you should adhere to accountability, and you should work very hard to make sure that you sustain that business, and you also employ fellow young people. Also encourage those ones who will come after you, because this fund is not only for this year, but it will continue. So there are those ones who to get this year, and there are those ones who to get next year. The ministry is ready to provide this fund every year so that we can able to assist. But we have to monitor those ones who are going to be given this fund so that we see that, yes, business are doing well. They employ other fellow young people, and there is sustainability and accountability, so that we can be able to use the state fund as it was intended for, but not just to go there, you get the fund, then you misuse them.
Mm.
So my message is clear. We have to be serious. The government is serious. We have to appreciate our government for the milestone, that achievement that it created, that fund for the young people, to make sure that our young people are also moving forward when it comes to business, and also they are producing and they keep themselves busy so that we can contribute towards the economic development of our country.
Of course. Governor, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the radar analysis and sharing that information with us.
Always. Thank you very much. Please. Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And there you had it from the governor of Oshana, that is Hafni Ipinge, talking about the National Youth Fund that has just been availed by the government. Of course, let's pause right here. And how could we discuss about this news without actually speaking to an economist, somebody who understood the figures and the numbers? So stay tuned. I'll be bringing in an economist to discuss right this particular news item. See you right after the commercial break.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back. We're still talking about the launch of the 257 million Namibian dollars National Youth Development Fund. And of course, I'm joined by economist Lucas Kumunika. Lucas, good afternoon and welcome once again to On the Radar Analysis.
Good afternoon and thank you for having me.
Pleasure always. Now, Lucas, with the launch of the 257 million Namibian dollar National Youth Development Fund aimed at reducing youth unemployment and promoting startups across key sectors, how effective do you believe such government-backed funds are in addressing structural unemployment, especially when administered through multiple financial institutions?
Yeah, thank you so much for the question. I think you have put it rightly so, to say the purpose of the fund is really to address the structural issues that we have or the problems that we have, especially when we are talking of the unemployment, which definitely boils down to other sort of problems such as inequality and poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really critical, despite the fact that the authors has been not looking at the administrative issues, it's sort of assisting us to address unemployment in a sense that if you look at our unemployment, really it's high among the youth. Therefore, it's quite critical that you made such kind of intervention which are targeting the youth in terms of employment reduction, so that at least you try to ensure that those that are excluded from the mainstream economy or the formal economy or those that are unemployed are able to get kind of assistance from the government for them to be able to run business kind of or to be able to engage in any activities that will assist them to not only to create job for themselves, but also to uplift their standard of living through income generation.
Mm-hmm.
And since this is not only targeting those that are coming up, the coming up entrepreneurs, or rather the fund is not only designed for business idea,
but
of course also for the upscaling of businesses. Therefore, it does better give an opportunity for for some businesses to grow and be able to be undertaken at the magnitude of scale, so that they're able to generate more jobs, not only for the owner or the owners of those businesses or business ideas, but also for other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to the governor just recently, prior to you, and he said that it's going to be in cooperatives. So it's not going to be targeted to individuals, but rather a company of people coming together to say, this is what we have in mind. How do you think that maybe helps in making sure that the fund is used for what its intended purpose was?
Yes, I think that's very critical. I think the most important thing, if one wants to make an impact, I think when the project is undertaken by a group of people, then an impact is felt, because like each member of those as an household that they take care of, or as people that they take care of. So if you give that fund to a group of people, then an impact is likely to be high, because now, if you empower one person, it's like you have empowered that person and the dependent of that person. But if it's a group of people, then also, then also the impact that you are making, you are also making it to different families or to different households. And what is most critical also in terms of, running this business into a cooperative as opposed to be any individual, is the sustainability of the business and the idea.
Yeah.
So it's like you have a business or you are creating legacy, because the business does not only depend on one person. If another person maybe somehow does not have interest in the project anymore, then you still have the other to run the business. And also what is most critical of a cooperative is that is the sharing of ideas and all sort of things that are required. So definitely you are likely to get the diversity of ideas, and then it will also maintain the business in terms of sustainability as far as the existence of the business is grown, as opposed to just depending on one person.
Mm-hmm. And how can the government, how would you say the government can ensure that access to the fund is fair, especially for youth in rural and underserved communities? Underserved, sorry.
Yeah, the fairness really start with designing the criteria, the eligibility criteria.
Yeah.
It's quite critical, because you have people that are not benefiting from the mainstream economy. So at least if the criteria are designed in such a manner that it's targeting those that are not benefiting, those who are unemployed, those that are not benefiting, currently not benefiting in any of, especially on the government side, any of the government, and those who are not do not have access to other kind of assistance from government, and also just employment in general. And also what is critical is also in terms of access to information. I think it's critical that the information is shared and to all the corners of the country, and all the agents, all the possible institutions and people that could be used information, so that people are aware of it, is quite critical, so that we do not have a situation whereby somebody will not be aware of this because of the sort of dissemination platform that was used. I think it's critical that the message is passed across in terms of this project, so that we do not have those people that will be left out, who could possibly be beneficiary of this project, but they are not because they were not informed. And what is also critical is also to consider the just training, so that we do not have situation whereby people are excluded because there are certain things, and also it need to be the way it should be disseminated should be that even the level of literacy thereof does not
exclude. It's not too bombastic or too complicated.
Yes, and even the platform through which, because for example, if the requirement is a business plan, but we should think of like a person who is not, whose level of literacy is not that high.
Ah, sort of like speaking the language that a layman can understand.
Yes, so that we do not disadvantage people. I think those are the things that we need to address. It's really access in terms of information, and even the service itself. And the way it should be designed, the requirements, for example, designing a business plan, it should be, there should be guidance so that there is no really way where somebody who could possibly, or who has a good idea, cannot benefit really because they cannot even articulate or put their idea in the business plan. So we need to break these barriers of communication and barriers of access in terms of the literacy rate. So that we ensure that this really will serve an intended purpose.
I appreciate those pointers you're making out there today. Now, what safeguards should be in place to ensure transparency, equitable access? You did speak about equitable access now, and measurable impact. How can we then measure the impact afterwards?
I think the critical component of ensuring that is mostly the monitoring and evaluation. I think it's really critical that we monitor, not from the process. Our process should be monitored to see if right procedures are followed in terms of as far as the implementation of the project is concerned. So we make sure that those who are entrusted with these roles follow the right procedures and do not really exclude. So it's the monitoring of our processes. And then also not only the process, but also we ensure that monitoring should not just that, should just end at the institutions that are implementing this fund, but also it should also go down to the people that are involved in the project. Are these people also delivering what is expected from them? For example, if you have a business plan, and you get the fund, are you really utilizing it the way you are supposed to utilize it?
Yeah.
So I think that is also critical to ensure that those are monitored and they are regular checkup in terms of the progress of those projects, so that at the end of the day, we do not fund a project and we do not attain our objective because there is there is no proper monitoring and evaluation thereof. And after that also, we just need, at a large scale, we need to do any evaluation after maybe a certain period of time, let's say number of years. So we should be able to say, where did we go wrong? To say, where did we go wrong? What did we do right? Where do we need to improve and so forth?
So
I think the monitoring and evaluation is quite a critical tool for us to ensure that things are done accordingly. Not only at institutional level or the institution which are entrusted to sort of roll out the fund, but also at the business level, those projects that are going to be funded, really. We ensure that these people are working, and we also assess the impact of those projects, and of course, priority should be given to those that have high impact.
Yeah. Okay, and lastly, the fund is being administered through various institutions like Agribank, NAMPOST, and Development Bank of Namibia. Does a multi-institution approach improve accessibility, Lucas, or does it risk complicating implementation?
Yeah, I think whether it is the implementation or make it complicated. I think it's the question is kind of an operational questions.
Mm.
So how do those institutions operate?
Mm.
And despite the fact that it will really depend if these systems are going to be speaking to one another, there is no way. And for as long as there is an harmonized system which can be replicated in both institutions and there are clear guidelines and you won't have an instance where the person is benefiting from the two institutions. I think if the system is that things are harmonized, the tools which are used by different institutions are harmonized and they won't be duplicate of beneficiaries. I think those are the things that we need to look at to see, to avoid the complexity and the complication of this process. I think it's a good thing for as long as we are going to draw a line to say whoever goes to this institution cannot go to that institution.
Mm.
And there is also no duplication of functions in this process. So we should be able to see what kind of, like, people should go to this as opposed to that. Are we expected really to apply it to all the institutions? So for as long as those guidelines are there and they are clear, and of course, the uniformity and the harmonization is in place to say, even the criteria-wise and everything, the procedures are the same at all the institutions, then I think then it's good to go. We can implement it through multiple institutions because it's also the thing of just at least because these are existing institutions which already have their dedicated function.
Yeah.
So you would want to also, you know, you don't want to overwhelm them with overwhelm one institution with this in addition to what they have. But we just have to ensure that those things are put in place so that we have a system which is harmonized and there is coordination and integration of this activity as far as the implementation of the project is concerned.
Correct. Lucas Kumanika, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar Analysis. You know, I do always appreciate when you have a voice of an economist, you start to think in a direction that you were not generally thinking in the first place. So thank you so much for always sharing your wisdom and your sentiments with us.
Thank you.
Okay.
And
there you had it from economist Lucas Kumanika. And with that being said, we also invite you to partake in this conversation. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Come and air your opinions and contributions or perhaps ask questions right here on the Radar Analysis. For now, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. But we'll be back soon, not long before you know it. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back, and still we're talking about the National Youth Fund that is tackling youth unemployment and is going to be unveiled in this very August with an amount of 257 million Namibian dollars. Now let's speak to Member of Parliament and Shadow Minister for Finance, that is Michael Mwashindange. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to On the Radar Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon. Good afternoon. How are you? Thank you very much for having me.
Of course, pleasure is all mine. Now, talking about this fund, just exactly what are your sentiments in regards to it?
Well, the fund is a welcomed development, though I have my reservations on how and the operations and the nitty gritties on how it's going to to help the targeted young people.
Yeah.
But it is a welcomed development because it comes at a point where Namibia is seriously struggling with a high level of youth unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to do our best to make sure that these young people are well taken care of.
Absolutely. Now, just exactly how would you advise to say what mechanisms should be placed, put in place to prevent nepotism or mismanagement of this fund?
Well, maybe before we even just talk about nepotism, the problem that we have in this country is that we have good ideas, we have good plans,
yeah,
most of the times, but the problem comes with the implementation always.
Mm.
For the longest of time since independence, Namibia had NDPs from NDP 1. Mm. Now we recently just launched NDP 6. And the government of the day, in all those NDPs, we were only able to achieve a merely 30% or even less of what the targeted intent, the intent target is.
Yes.
So you now wonder what miracle will happen, because it's not just NDPs. We had Harambee Prosperity Plan as well. It failed like all the NDPs. We had Vision 2030. It they all failed. They are good plans, but the way they are executed is problematic. So I do not know what the miracle is that we are going to employ to make sure that the National Youth Fund is a success. But while we first and foremost need to make sure that there is an independent committee that has to do selection of these projects of these young people.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we continue the way we do things, this project is going to be another white elephant where five people are going to benefit, and because they are a family of Mwashindange, they have a surname of Wu, and then before you know it, they benefit, from the fund on the expenses of other Namibians who seriously, even in most cases, needs these funds. We need to make sure that the young people are first and foremost trained to make sure that they understand the issue of handling money, they understand simple things as bookkeeping. We need to start there and make sure that we train them to be patriotic. To be patriotic, to say when you get this money, you are getting it from the state, and it's our hope that you will be able to do the most with this little fund so that the fund is able to help the other person.
I appreciate that. Before you go forward, we just have a scheduled commercial break. Just stay on the line and we'll be back to continue.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Stock up for August with real value at WB. Get a 2-liter Pepsi now for a sweet $14.99. 750ml WB cooking oil for only $26.99. 1 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for just $36.99. And 50 Hi Baby active diapers at only $124.99. See all our real value deals at www.vurmanbrock.com. we care.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
We are back. We're busy talking about the National Development Fund alongside Member of Parliament Mwashindange, Michael Mwashindange. Yes, you were busy speaking about how the youth need to be educated on how actually to use this fund. Kindly continue.
Yes, I was concluding to say the intended young people that are targeted as beneficiaries for this fund needs to be properly educated first and foremost on how to handle all those issues that have to do with running the successful running of our businesses, their businesses. And I was also just saying they need to be taught values on what to do so that they don't just get 100,000 and then before you know it, tomorrow they buy a Golf 7 and then the other day the Golf 7 is in an accident and then it's the end of the era.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to start there, but also just to seriously as the people of Namibia and especially the people who are in offices to administer this project, to make sure that it benefits Namibians and not a group of people. Because this is taxpayers' money.
Mm-hmm.
Taxpayers' money is everybody's money.
Mm-hmm.
It's everybody's contribution. So it must be able to benefit everybody from the south to the north,
mm-hmm.
to the east, to the southeast, to the central,
mm-hmm.
everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But we must be able to look at capacity and skills that can be funded so that we don't just end up funding everything else that will not be able to grow into a successful business and be able to employ some other young people again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I agree with you. Now, the fund is intended to target agriculture and agro-processing, green and eco-friendly projects, as well as manufacturing and value addition. Now, of course, other sectors include creative industries, fashion, entertainment, film and craft, ICT and tech innovation. How then would you say young people should use this opportunity to leverage that which they are very talented with? And actually expand it, and not just for themselves, and you spoke very well about that point of education to the young people, and not just for themselves, but for the benefit of other people, at the end of the day, for them to create employment for other people. Just what advice and word of caution would you give to them?
Well, the fellow young people, first, they need to understand that when it's said that we are the leaders of tomorrow, that tomorrow should have started 10 years or 15 or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it starts with taking responsibilities and to be able to seriously look around them and see what it is that they can do to be able to benefit from this fund, and not for themselves, as you rightly put it, but also really to be able to grow SMEs and businesses, to be able to hamper unemployment that we have. But the entry point probably will be that we will need to be very much self-disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
Self-disciplined to understand that the only way that we can help ourselves is to be able to, you know, grasp opportunities that are available to us. We as lawmakers, we will look at the side of lawmaking to make sure that the ground is leveled and the opportunities are created where we can. And it's then up to our fellow young people to make sure that they take up space and make sure that they do the most out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the other issue then is, especially when you look at the targeted sectors like agriculture, we need to think deep because Namibia is one of the countries that receive rainfall, but in most cases we do not harvest our water.
Mm.
Our water goes straight to the sea, mm-hmm. and then it wastes, and we cannot do
so much in agriculture when you do not have water.
Mm.
So it's an issue on its own that we need to think about. But for the intended beneficiaries, my advice and my caution really is that you must take up space, and we must not think of what we can get, but what can we get to be able to empower ourselves and others to make sure that we change the living conditions of ourselves, our families, and the rest of the Namibian people.
Absolutely.
The intention is really intentional that we must be able to grow to a country that can be able to produce food and also produce jobs for our people.
Mm. I love your closing remarks. We must be able to get to a point where the country can be able to produce food and produce jobs for our countries.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Mwashindange, for making time for us right here on the Radar Analysis.
Thank you very much, Juju. Have a nice day, and thank you very much, your listeners.
Okay. And there you had it up from Member of Parliament Michael Mwashindange, also sharing his sentiments with us right here. And one thing I would pick up from all this conversation today is a word of caution to you, the youth out there who may find yourself very lucky to benefit from this fund. And of course, as they did say, the governor did say it's going to be in sequences. And so make sure that you address the money to what it's intended for, and not for what it is not intended for. Now, also just some more information on how this fund is structured. Well, the fund is seeded with $257 million to be channeled through several partnering financial institutions, including the Development Bank of Namibia, Agribank, Nampost, and the Environmental Investment Fund, a guarantee facility from NASIRA, Namibia Special Risk Insurance Association, secured in May 2025, enhances access by allowing non-collateral lending for qualifying youth-led ventures. Now, startup support youth projects can qualify for funds between $60 Namibian to $200,000 Namibian based on a project entrepreneurship model. As you had the governor say, cooperatives focused on helping enterprises scale and become market ready. The Namibia National Reinsurance Corporation, Namibri, donated $5 million as the inaugural private sector investment in the fund, early activities and geographic engagement. Now you are tuned into On the Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Our studio line is very much open. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Come through and share your opinions and contributions right here on the radar. Now let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we shall be telling you what's making headlines today in terms of economic indicators.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we take you to what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators. And always we start off with the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies, and that's exactly what we will be telling you. Now, today, one US dollar will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 77 cents, while 1 euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 72 cents. One Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 59 cents, while 1 pound sterling will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 84 cents. In terms of Botswana pula, you will get one Namibian dollar and 32 cents, while 1 naira will get you 0.012 Namibian dollars. And now for some trading economics. The British pound strengthened to 1.34 in the highest level in about 2 weeks as traders reacted to the Bank of England's latest monetary policy decision. Now, the central bank delivered a widely expected 25 basis points rate cut, bringing the key bank rate down to 4%, its lowest level since 2023. However, the decision revealed deep divisions and the cut was approved by a narrow 5-4 majority following an initial vote that resulted in a three-way split. Now, it marked the first time that a second round of voting was required to reach a final decision. Governor Bailey added that interest rates are still on a downward path, but any future cuts will need to be made gradually and carefully. Now, the bank also raised its inflation forecast for September to 4% from 3.7%. In response, traders have pared back expectations to further rate cuts this year. Markets are now pricing in just 17 basis points of additional easing in 2025 compared to another 25 basis points cut anticipated before the announcement. The annual inflation rate in Ireland eased to 1.7% in July 2025 from 1.8% in the previous month. Now, the slowdown was mainly driven by deeper price declines in transport at -2.8% versus -2.0% and clothing and footwear at -2.4% versus -2.3% alongside a slower price increase in recreation and culture. Meanwhile, the unemployment rate in Ireland jumped to 4.9%. Pardon me. Now, the trade deficit in Greece expanded to 3.1 billion euros in June 2025 from 2.4 billion euros in the same month last year as exports dropped while imports increased. Exports declined by 8.3% year on year to 3.9 billion euro amid lower sales to third countries. Foreign exchange reserves in Singapore edged down to SDG D 515.48 billion in July 2025. That is from SGD 515.78 billion in the previous month. Now, the decline was primarily driven by a dip in gold and foreign exchange holdings. Special drawing rights remained nearly flat as SGD 8.3 billion, while the IMF reserve positions saw a slight uptick. In comparison, reserves stood at SGD 506.43 billion in July 2024. And now that's what we had for you today in terms of trading economics. Now let's pause right here. And when we do return from the commercial break, we shall be telling you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Ipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida. Tike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito da njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda beri inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back, and now get ready for news beyond the borders. We're starting off regionally, then we move over to continental news, thereafter international news. Let's start off in South Africa, where they're discussing the collapse of Free State municipalities.
Municipalities in the country are marred by... We're going to stay with local government issues because many municipalities in the country are marred by irregularities, unauthorized expenditure, maladministration, and a lack of consequence management have all become common themes when we look at local government, especially in the Free State province. That's according to Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. The committee is now piloting a new joint oversight model in the province to address persistent governance and financial underperformance. For more on this, let's speak to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Dr. Swelim Kize. And I believe you're joining us by phone this evening, Dr. Good to have your time. So one assessment today describing the Free State province as the worst run province in the country. Does that match up with what you saw in your recent visit there?
I would say yes, it does. But also, it's not the only province that's got the serious challenges. There are other provinces that have got a similar problem. But when you have a province that has got a serial offenders who come with disclaimers, inability to submit normal annual financial statements, with persistent problems that have been previously identified by the Auditor General being corrected, the dysfunctionality, the inability to, you know, manage their huge debts, and inability to raise adequate revenue, even though the situation could allow them. All of these are challenges that we have seen. Linked to them would be irregularities and corruption. So we do believe that this situation is something that needs a much stronger and aggressive management, which means the issues of interventions become very, very important from the higher authority, whether it be provincial or national government. But what we have done as a portfolio committee is we've decided to do a joint oversight program which takes committee on COCTA, on SCOPA, and the one on the Auditor General to come together and meet with the provincial committees of the same nature, and then bind everyone together in a common program of accountability and looking for consequence management.
But there's a big problem there, isn't there, Dr. Mkhize, when ultimately people at a national level have to step in when elected and appointed officials at local government who are drawing salaries every month and are seized with these responsibilities have failed to meet their daily objectives?
I agree that everyone should be doing their bit. In fact, the municipal council has got the authority to oversee and correct a lot of these. But if it's not being done, we now need to call on the higher spheres to be able to step in to deal with that situation. In this case, we combine national and provincial oversight so that we can then hold everyone responsible and accountable for what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. We will then be asking them for a list of things that need to be corrected, particularly to make sure that the wrong things are not repeated and the wrong, the irregularities are acted upon. We want to have a record of consequence management and people taking responsibility. In 3 months, we'll come back and we'll be expecting the minister and the MECs to actually account, the premiers to account for what should have been an intervention on their part. They need to therefore answer what is it that they've done to ensure that there's correction at the municipal level, mm-hmm. because the constitution forces the government at national and provincial level to do support, which is right. Section 154. But on the other hand, Section 139, the province, if the support doesn't work, then they must intervene. So they need to explain why they haven't intervened.
As you said right at the beginning, pardon me, sir, for cutting you.
Still in South Africa, Operation Dudula wants to ban foreign nationals from public schools.
Now, Operation Dudula plans to stop children of foreign nationals from attending public schools. Education activists are condemning this move, though, which is being accused, the group being accused of xenophobia, saying the country needs to put its citizens first. It's been warned that its actions are unconstitutional and illegal.
We want to prioritize our own South Africans more than anything. It cannot be correct that you have a South African child who will be admitted at a school further than their home, of a school of preference, because we have non-South Africans who are occupying those seats. Now, yes, the Constitution does say that every child has a right to education, but again, we are misinterpreting the Constitution. This talks about children that are actually South Africans and not of foreigners. Now, this constitution was drafted because of the people of South Africa prior apartheid. There was exclusion of black, colored, and Indians. But after that, because of the inclusion and diversity, that's when it talks about everyone who lives in it. So when we talk about these children, it's not children of foreign nationals, but it's children of South Africa that needs to be prioritized.
I don't know, something about South Africans in terms of always having issues with other people from other countries just doesn't quite sit right with many people. And of course, I'm one of those people. Now, of course, the country says Dudula has been warned that its actions are unconstitutional and illegal, regardless of their explanations right there. Let's move on to Kenya, where Bloggers Association says Kenya's internet faces major challenges.
Service packs.
Now, a new report by the Bloggers Association of Kenya, that is known as State of the Internet in Kenya 2020, reveals that while Kenya has solidified its status as a regional tech leader, its digital progress is being undermined by serious challenges to digital rights. The nation solidified its position as a regional ICT leader, boasting expanded connectivity, a thriving digital economy, and a blossoming ecosystem of startups and online content creators.
On the other hand, the digital economy is booming. Companies are thriving. Content creators are getting jobs. Tech workers are getting jobs, etc. But there's a wave of repression. People are getting arrested. People are dying after being targeted and intimidated because of creating content, because of expressing themselves.
Surveillance has crippled our democracy, and reading through the report, I really just made mental notes that we really need to engage ISPs, internet service providers, as much as possible, because they've been mentioned a couple of times, and more often than not, especially as civil society organizations, these are entities or these are stakeholders that we don't engage as much. So the report explicitly, you know, mentions a few, particularly in the country, that either have been party to promoting surveillance or violation of data protection. And I think we need to have more people in the room, particularly from the private sector, internet service providers, to ensure that we are all on the same page.
Meanwhile, in Uganda, experts urge the public to pay attention to their diet in order to avoid diabetes.
Non-communicable diseases are silent but a growing crisis, including conditions such as cancer, diabetes, among others. Health workers have warned that these diseases are on the rise. Nutritionists have cautioned the public to be mindful of what they eat in order to reduce the risk of developing these lifestyle-related illnesses. For example, eating food high in fats may not mean that one already has a non-communicable disease, but It increases the risk of developing one. It predisposes one to being overweight and obese, especially in cases where individuals rarely exercise.
Every time you go to serve food, let's say you're in a meeting, and then you realize that every food that has been served is actually fried. So you need to measure how much of the fat you need to eat. For instance, if I go to a table to serve, and there is food that has been fried from table one to the last, I don't need to take everything fried.
Processed sugars are also a risk factor.
If you continually take too much sugar in tea, in porridge, in juice, in sodas, in processed products, there is a risk that actually you're taking in too much sugar, which are also empty calories that your body is not sufficiently using. And so the body ends up getting this too much sugar and condenses it and stores it for you in form of fat. And of course, now when you have too much fat, people start putting on a lot of weight.
Nutritionists have called for the consumption of traditional staple foods such as matoke and kalo, which are recommended as healthier alternatives to processed foods. However, some experts warn that portion size still matters and must be observed.
We usually don't advertise our staple foods. That's why some of the processed foods are consumed more than our staple foods. When I go back to our staple foods, it goes back to where do you grow them. Some of the soils that we grow our staple foods are not rich in nutrients. So you get staple foods that are actually looking like staple foods, but they are missing the other nutritional value.
These foods, when whole, are actually having nutrients that you cannot get from processed foods. But every time you're processing this food, you're actually removing most of those nutrients. So talk about maybe vitamins, vitamin B complex or other micronutrients. Every time you're highly processing this particular food, you're actually throwing them away. And so we end up missing the nutrients in the food, and we end up eating food with actually less or no nutrients.
Michael Jembe, president of the Allied Nutritionist Association, says that even staple foods can lose their nutritional value if they are poorly prepared or grown in nutrient-depleted soil. He emphasized that how food is prepared is just as important as what is eaten.
It goes back to where do you grow them. Some of the soils that we grow our staple foods are not rich in nutrients. So you get staple foods that are actually looking like staple foods, but they are missing the other nutritional value.
Take an instance. If someone is preparing chips, you have to get the chips and you dip them in oil. Moreover, this oil has been probably used over and over again. That is one of the challenges we have.
But how can one know how much they should be consuming, especially when portion sizes are mentioned?
We recommend that you need to have fruits and vegetables taking a little bit, the biggest portion of your meal, because they are whole.
According to the World Health Organization, in 2021, 18 million people died from a non-communicable disease before the age of 70. Norbert Atkunda, NTV News.
Uganda's refugee population nears 2 million, and funding cuts amid funding cuts and regional conflict.
Kiryandongo refugee settlement in midwestern Uganda has seen an influx of people from neighboring countries. Many of them arrived severely traumatized, in need of medical care and basic assistance that more often than not is in short supply. Hamida Ibrahim fled violence in her home country, Sudan, and ended up in Kiryandongo.
We used to live in Khartoum, but we moved to Darfur because of the war. We've been here for 3 months. I'm with my daughters. My husband passed away. We have nothing, no money. The children are not in school, and they started getting sick. The situation here is really difficult.
More and more refugees are arriving in Uganda, Africa's largest refugee-hosting country and the third largest globally. But with less resources for such large numbers, it means limited access to essential services. This is evident at Arnold Primary School, where classes are extremely overcrowded, yet enrollment continues.
Even the class is too full to the extent you, the teachers, you cannot really supervise the learners very well. Because as a teacher you are teaching, you need to move between the children to check whether they are very attentive. But this one has not been easy because of the congestion in the class. And when it comes time for exam, all of them come and you find they sit even outside on the verandas.
Some of these children arrive unaccompanied, often separated from their families.
They came without families,
They have no money, as I said. They have no relatives with them. They are still very young.
Yes.
They are unlike me. I am an old man. I can do my things. But for them, they need to be guided by someone.
Uganda is currently home to 1.93 million refugees, over a million of whom are below the age of 18. That number is due to rise to 2 million by the end of the year, according to the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. An average of 600 people are still arriving daily amid the worst funding crisis in decades. According to the UN Refugee Agency, malnutrition rates are rising as essential supplies shrink.
The situation has become untenable. We simply don't have the resources for the basic needs, whether it's water, whether it's shelter. I'm seeing children that are malnourished. I'm seeing women that are desperate, having arrived here with almost nothing.
The refugee agency is now appealing for international support to continue protecting the most vulnerable and safeguarding their future. Caroline B., CGTN.
Meanwhile, Zambia is talking about political will driving economic stability.
IMF here says, well, rather projects that Zambia's debt to GDP ratio will fall to 91.1% as at the end of the year 2025. Obviously, this marks a very significant milestone, as it were. Just stress for us how significant this is in terms of Zambia's fiscal stress for this year.
Okay, thank you so much. So it's true, the forecast is 91.9% at the end of this year, and then we should hit 79.2 into next year and eventually get to 69.4 in 2027. If you look at where we're coming from, debt to GDP ratio was a figure that was through the roof. Government had no fiscal space. And if you have no fiscal space, it means that you don't have resources that you can invest in social sectors, in healthcare. And I would say the government was constrained. But what we are seeing right now is a testament of true leadership, the right political will, and the benefits of being on an IMF program from a fiscal standpoint. I think in your earlier remarks, you mentioned three things: a strengthened macroeconomic framework, successful external debt restructure, and the third piece would be around the fiscal stance that, you know, the government has pretty much taken. And all that tends to bear fruit. So like I always say when I come for an interview, like, macroeconomic indicators do take a bit of time to eventually manifest. So Zambia is not yet out of the woods, but sustainable, positive trend. According to the fifth review by the IMF, Zambia's performance on the program has been satisfactory, which is remarkable, you know, for a nation that once defaulted and now is being looked at by many nations. Because if you look at the common framework, I mean, we were the first country, you know, to have debt restructured under the common framework. So you can expect that if you look at the macros, they're now improving. Inflation is expected to close the year at 11%, GDP growth 5.8%, and Zambia is now getting to those zones or regions where it would start posting, you know, growth above 7% and hopefully double digit. Mining is doing great, manufacturing as well. So you can see that the engines of growth are then eventually moving. And then to just give Zambia a pat on the back, coming from the worst drought in 40 years.
African startups see a significant rebound in funding activity in July.
Recent data has revealed that Africa's tech ecosystem is regaining its footing, with startups now seeing a significant rebound in funding activity just this past month. Now, a database that tracks monthly startup funding called Africa the Big Deal says that startups announced total funding of about $550 million in July, which is the highest amount raised in a single month in over 2 years. About 61 African startups announced at least $100,000 in funding, which is a significant jump compared to the first half of the year, when we saw that number hover at around 40 companies or fewer, typically. Now, of the 61 startups spread across 15 nations, about 41 are located in the big four markets. That's Nigeria, Egypt, South Africa, and Kenya. However, the report also noted that 89% of the $550 million raised came from debt. That is a fact that experts say signals a major consequential shift in how startups are financed on the continent. But let's find out more about this shift. We're now joined by Sheyi Ebenezer. He is the CEO of Nigerian-based fintech Payaza. Great to have you on the show with us again, Sheyi. Now, of course, let's start off with the key point this report makes, which is the fact that 89% of the $550 million we saw raised so far in July came from debt. Why exactly is this being considered a major shift in how startups are financed in Africa?
Thank you so much, Uche. It's very, very major and highly consequential shift. You know, historically, the narrative around African fintech startup has exclusively been around VC funding and equity. But this is an exceptional growth of the 89% cut across almost about $489 million. So which talks to the increase and then the growth within the space. And we are looking at debt, a single debt in a particular month. That's very, very dominant and it's a huge paradigm shift. So this virtually signifies that the ecosystem is growing and then people are doing business. The business model within the tech space is quite different. The business model is being appreciated. People are more focusing on the EBITDA. You are looking at the profitability of each and every business within the ecosystem. So that's the reason why you're seeing the shift. And then I think we expect more of this within the ecosystem.
Right. And it is interesting because when we talk about African startups, we usually talk about VC funding, for example. But let's talk about how Payaza is going about it. You are currently the only African startup that is raising local currency debt via commercial paper. In fact, you recently secured another $20 billion, or rather approval from the SEC to raise another 20 billion naira. What are the reasons that you are not as cautious about debt as others seem to be in the industry?
Okay, from the get-go, what we set up to do at Payaza is just to create an oasis of a world-class payment institution that can function anywhere in the world. And then going by this vision, we need to start doing things differently. So that's one of the reasons why our focus is shifted away from VC. That's why we focus on debt. Essentially, if you look at debt, debt creates one thing, which is discipline. And then before you can have access to debt, like what we've done our series one, we've done our series two, we did the repayment, which was on live on FMDQ. So looking at this particular firm, it tends to have high impact on your corporate governance, how you run the business. And then more importantly, within the ecosystem, that discipline is the hallmark that you need to set the standard for a business who is going to go global and then do things in a different way. So that's one reason why we're focusing in that space. We keep raising, because our business model supports it and then gives us a structure that will push the business ahead of each and every, goal and the vision that we set for the business.
Ghana mourns loss of top ministers in military helicopter crash.
Ghana's ministers of defense and environment were killed alongside the vice chair of the ruling party and the top national security advisor on Wednesday when a helicopter they were traveling in crashed in the northwest of the country. The Ghanaian military said the aircraft took off in the morning from the capital Accra and was heading northwest into the interior when it went off the radar. The wreckage was later found in the Adansi area of Ashanti region. He has left a legacy of honesty, integrity and public service. These are the few takeaways that I want us to always remember him for. He was incorruptible. You cannot see that scar on him. Very dedicated to Islam and very true to his words. So we've lost a lot. It's a pain, and words cannot describe how we're feeling right now. But one thing that I used to comfort myself with is that we will all go. Mourners gathered at the late defense minister's residence as well as at the party's headquarters, and Ghana's government described the crash as a national tragedy. The cause of the accident was not immediately known, and the military said an investigation was underway.
Nigeria issues flood alert for 19 states amid heavy rain forecasts.
Nigeria's Environmental Ministry has issued an urgent flood alert for 19 states, warning that intense rainfall forecasts from August 5 to 9 could trigger widespread flooding across the country. The conditions stem from a three-day weather system flagged by the Nigerian Meteorological Agency, which predicts thunderstorms and heavy rains from Monday to Wednesday, particularly in northern states such as Adamawa, Taraba, Sokoto, Kebbi, Zamfara, Jigawa, Kano and Katsina states. Authorities across the affected regions have been urged to activate local emergency response systems, deploy flood warning, safeguard infrastructure, and advise the public to avoid traveling during storms. This alert comes against a backdrop of recent devastating floods, including the May Mokwa disaster in Niger State, in which over 500 people died. Numerous homes and farms were destroyed and thousands were displaced, highlighting the nation's vulnerability as rainy season intensifies.
And now for international news, Donald Trump's global tariffs take effect.
President Trump's sweeping global tariffs for more than 90 countries have come into effect. Minutes before, he took to social media saying, "It's midnight, billions of dollars in tariffs are now flowing into the United States of America." These tariffs, or taxes on goods exported to the US, were first unveiled back in April as his plan to change the global economy, with virtually all of America's trading partners affected. The president has now also threatened a 100% tariff on foreign-made computer chips as he pushes tech firms to invest in the US. Let's look at some of the details. Now, India, for example, has a levy of 25%, but President Trump has threatened to double that to 50% from next month over the ongoing furore of India buying Russian oil. Delhi called the move unfair, unjustified, and unreasonable. Some of the other steepest tariffs are on countries like Switzerland, Laos and Syria. Other trading partners, well, they fare slightly better, with 15% levies on exports from the European Union, Japan and South Korea. And they're among the few trading partners who have managed to strike deals with Washington. And the UK has emerged relatively unscathed, with base tariffs of 10% after Sir Keir Starmer secured a trade agreement with President Trump. Well, joining me now to unpick some of this is our business presenter, Sally Bundock, our India business reporter, Davina Gupta, and our Southern Africa correspondent, Pumza Filani. Sally, first of all, I mean, we've talked about this moment for months, ever since Donald Trump brought out that huge board.
Just in the Rose Garden of the White House. We all remember it well, don't we?
Of course, here we are. I mean, how big a moment is this for the global economy?
It's a new era for global trade that we're seeing take effect today. So as you say, on April the 2nd, which President Trump called Liberation Day, he revealed the list of countries and what tariffs would be on their goods when they were sent to the United States. Since that moment, there's been negotiations, deals, there's been arguments, there's been spats, and there have been all sorts of negotiations going on. And various countries now have got their own particular tariffs levels in place, and for nearly all those countries that came into effect today. Some were at slightly different times, like Brazil, for example, with this time yesterday, but for majority, today is the day. And what it means is for America, their US levies on tariffs are now at the highest level for centuries. And as you mentioned there on social media, at the moment the tariffs came into effect, the president put out that post on social media saying, billions of dollars in tariffs are now flowing into the United States of America. But what this means for the different countries and different industries as well is complicated. Mm. There is so much detail and the devil is right in there. So if you're a pharmaceuticals company, you still don't know yet what the levies will be on your goods. He's threatened something like 200% tariffs. If you're a car maker, it's different. If you're a steel maker, it's different. If you're an American company importing all your goods from the Philippines or Vietnam or China, you're paying these levies and you're making decisions whether you're going to pass them on to the US consumer, your customer, or whether you're going to try and absorb it yourself. So I've spoken to chief executives of many small businesses in America who say we are on the brink. This is tipping us over the edge.
Let's get into one bit of that detail. There's some specific tariffs against electronic goods, well, semiconductors, that's chips right. In particular. Talk us through what that could mean for many people.
Well, again, this is something that was announced yesterday by President Trump in the Oval Office. And at the time, he had Tim Cook right next to him, the chief executive of Apple. Basically, he said that 100% tariffs on imports of chips, semiconductors, would be coming into effect soon. But there's a big exemption to that, and that is it will not apply to companies who are already manufacturing parts of their business in the US or have said they have plans to do so. And actually, at the time, as I mentioned, the CEO of Apple was right there in the Oval Office, Tim Cook, pledging he would invest a further $100 billion into new manufacturing in the United States. So
Trump and Putin are set to meet in the coming days.
We begin with breaking news from Moscow, where the Kremlin has confirmed that a meeting between Russia's President Putin and President Donald Trump will go ahead in the coming days. Next week has been set as a target date. The venue has been agreed upon and will be announced soon. Earlier, Donald Trump said there's a good chance he will meet with Vladimir Putin to discuss a possible ceasefire in Ukraine. His comments followed Wednesday's three-hour meeting between Trump's special envoy Steve Witkoff and the Russian president, which both Washington and Moscow described as positive. Witkoff raised the prospect of a trilateral meeting between Trump, Putin and Zelensky, but Moscow left it without response. Volodymyr Zelensky said Ukraine had repeatedly insisted that a meeting between leaders was needed to find a solution. Our North America correspondent, Arunade Mukherjee, reports.
A much-anticipated meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, and Russian President Vladimir Putin. And all eyes on whether the handshake and smiles can cement Mr. Trump's long-pending ambitions of ending the war in Ukraine. With a strong possibility now of the next interaction being between the U.S. president and leaders of the two countries at war.
There's a very good chance that we could be ending the end of that road. That road was long and continues to be long, but there's a good chance that there will be a meeting very soon.
Kremlin aide Yuri Ushakov, too, said the talks were useful and constructive. And on the other side, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said he had spoken to President Trump about Mr. Witkoff's visit, with European leaders also on the call. The optics indicating a renewed push to end the war. But in the past, three rounds of talks between Ukraine and Russia have failed to bring the war closer to an end. 3.5 years since Moscow's full invasion. Even now, both the Kremlin and the White House haven't spelled out what these good and constructive talks entailed. All the more reason President Trump remains optimistic, but also cautious.
We've been working on this a long time. There are thousands of young people dying, mostly soldiers, but also, you know, missiles being hit into Kiev and other places.
Mr. Trump has tried to portray himself as the global leader who can get peace deals done around the world. But so far, his inability to do so in the case of Ukraine and Russia, a war he had claimed he would stop in a day, has left him increasingly frustrated. Arunoday Mukherjee, BBC News, Washington.
Well, with me is Vitaly Shevchenko, Russian editor at BBC Monitoring. So the signs all look like this meeting is going to go ahead very soon. And how significant will that be for President Trump to sit down with President Putin?
Well, it's significant in the sense that they haven't sat down and discussed this full scale invasion before. But we have to remember that this is what Vladimir Putin really once. Without making any concessions or promises, he has secured a meeting with Donald Trump, apparently. That would make him look like he's equal to the world's movers and shakers. He is back on the global political arena. And when the US Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, said that now, after the talks held by Steve Witkoff, Donald Trump's envoy, and Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin yesterday, now Washington has a better understanding of the conditions under which Russia might be prepared to end this war. I wonder if these conditions to which he's referring are any different from what Russia presented back on the 2nd of June during talks with Ukraine in Istanbul. Because just last Friday, Vladimir Putin said, no, we're still sticking to those conditions. And those conditions, they essentially amount to a demand for surrender. Russia wants the whole five regions in Ukraine's southeast that it claims as its own, including areas that it doesn't currently control. And things like reducing the size of the Ukrainian army and so on and so forth. Clearly that is not acceptable to Ukraine. Is this something that Washington believes acceptable? That's the huge question now.
It did seem for a long time, didn't it, that the two sides were still very far apart. Is anything different now? We know that Donald Trump has threatened tougher sanctions on Russia. He had set that deadline of Friday this week. Do you think he's ever going to follow through on that in reality? Does Russia believe he's serious about that?
Well, it's also a huge question. And a lot of people, both in Ukraine and in Russia, where the stock market has been rising following the latest from Washington, they didn't think that Donald Trump is going to get tough on Russia suddenly and start imposing sanctions on Russia, its trading partners, sanctions that would really hurt. In fact, Donald Trump sounding excited and optimistic after talks with Vladimir Putin is nothing new. Time and again, this happened, and it was followed by devastating Russian attacks on Ukrainian civilians, after which Donald Trump himself said that he had a feeling that Vladimir Putin was tapping him along, to use Donald Trump's phrase. Is this going to be different? We don't really know. It's too early to say. Last night was relatively quiet in Ukraine. No major Russian attacks. If this quiet is going to last, we don't really know.
All right, Vitaly, thank you so much for joining us. We'll watch the developments in the days ahead.
Toyota cuts annual profit estimates, experts, at $9.5 billion tariff hit.
Toyota cut its full-year operating profit forecast by 16% on Thursday and expects a nearly $10 billion hit from US tariffs on imported cars. That's as the firm also grapples with higher material prices and a stronger yen. The world's biggest automaker cut its operating profit forecast for the financial year to the end of March to $21.7 billion. From the April to June first quarter, Toyota reported an operating profit of close to $8 billion. That was down from a year earlier, but above analyst estimates. Toyota's outlook highlights the pressure US tariffs are placing on Japanese automakers. That's despite a trade agreement between Tokyo and Washington offering potential relief. Under the bilateral deal agreed last month, Japanese auto exports to the US would face a 15% tariff. That's down from levies totaling 27.5% previously. But a time frame for the change to go into effect has yet to be announced. Last week, Toyota reported record global output and sales for the first half of the year. It's been driven by strong demand in North America, Japan, and China.
And now we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Bulletin. Do stay tuned for the Voters Education Program brought to you by Bishop Lucas Katenda. Also, the Onkonana Dingi program won't be airing today, but you can expect the Home Run Show from 16:30 with Dwight and Helmut. Thereafter, David Chombe keeps you company at 1600 hours with the Business Economics segment. Now from Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful day.